You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Monster House presents.
Monster Talk is supported by listeners like you. Find out how you can contribute via Patreon or with reviews at monstertalk.org/support. Your contributions, large or small, make a huge difference. Thanks.
I've chafed for years at this demigod. Snakes in my beautiful city. To the west, Nemedia Aquilonia. To the south, Carth Stygia. Snakes everywhere, these evil towers.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane! Everybody strap in! I'm about to open some fucking windows.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
I hear you're having trouble with a snake.
Dionne was a pagan snake god.
And snake watching.
It's as if they were just swallowed up.
John Dampson went a fishing once, a fishing in the weir. He caught a fish upon his hook. He thought, looked mighty queer. Now what the kind of fish it was, John Dampton couldn't tell. But he didn't like the look of it, so he threw it down a well.
Ha! We must take the word worm to literally.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You've probably heard the idiom cold-blooded, as in, he was a cold-blooded killer, or she had a cold-blooded approach to business. Well, that idiom comes from the discovery that some animals generate their own body heat, while others rely on the environment to heat them up. This discovery is first noted in English in the 1600s, but by the mid-1700s, the idiomatic use to describe ruthless behavior was quite popular. It was the age of reason. And while science was still in its infancy, the poetical understanding that reptiles and fish didn't have the warm emotional range of humans quickly baked this metaphor into our language. Now, science has moved on to a more nuanced understanding of animal thermodynamics. But we still retain many misunderstandings and mythic ideas about reptiles. In the intro, I threw together a few clips from various movies such as Lair of the White Worm and the absolutely ridiculous Snakes on a Plane, but reptiles far beyond snakes are a fertile breeding ground for myths, and today we're joined by Joshua Ems to talk through some of these fascinating tales.
Monster Talk.
Tonight we're talking with Joshua Ems, who's the president of the New Mexico Herpetological Society based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we're going to be talking about reptiles and myths about reptiles, reptiles as monsters, and see if we can't scale this topic up.
I heard what you did there. Yeah, he's already started.
That's right.
Get one out of the gate.
So, oh,
you come for the monsters and stay for the puns, right?
Or based on our subscription numbers, maybe that's why they're leaving. I don't know.
Yeah.
I asked my wife what she thinks. She said, "You have a podcast?" What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, tell us, who is Joshua Ims? I don't want to undersell you, because I know you're probably more interesting than that one sentence.
Okay, well, I'm an Albuquerque, New Mexico native. I've lived here all my life, give or take. I spent a couple years in Idaho, and then I went to school in Hawaii. Got a bachelor's degree at BYU Hawaii in history, of all things, and then ended up getting real into reptiles and amphibians. I've always grown up around them, and always, you know, it's always been an interest. And just kind of after I got back here and to Albuquerque and started working, I'm actually in the pest control industry. I'm an entomologist, but got involved with the New Mexico Herpetological Society and eventually became president. I'm currently not the president. We have Max Havelka is our president now, but I am the website, the media coordinator, or whatever they want to call it.
Sure. Is control of that position pretty ruthless and cold-blooded?
No.
Oh, boy. Well, Josh, you've got a really interesting background, and we brought you on the show to talk about reptile myths. But first, I guess we should establish, what is a reptile?
Well, reptiles are, you know, a family of animals. You have your mammals, your birds, your reptiles, and your amphibians on the vertebrate side. So reptiles, you know, what they call cold-blooded, it's really not necessarily cold-blooded. It's just they're ectotherms. They get their heat from their surroundings. They don't produce heat like we as humans do. And it's divided into the main families of snakes, lizards, turtles. There's some other like little outliers, like the tuatara. It's kind of its own thing. And it, for most intents and purposes, it looks like a lizard, but they're a little different. They're found in New Zealand, and cool little animals. I've never seen one. Well, I think I've seen one in a zoo. I think I saw one in San Diego.
Well, next time I watch Lord of the Rings, I'll keep an eye out, see if there's one in the back. You know,
yes, that's right.
Now, we've got lots of interesting reptiles in the Antipodes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people seem to just have a natural aversion to reptiles. I think I've seen some videos that you've done where your family does not seem to have this problem. My daughter, I've got one daughter who doesn't seem to care, and then I've got a daughter who definitely does not want to be around reptiles. And of course, a wife who, you know, doesn't even want to go outside. So yeah, yeah. But any thoughts on why people are so freaked out by reptiles?
Well, I think, you know, the snakes that humans evolved around, a lot of them were venomous, and there was no treatments. So these are definitely dangerous. And so primates kind of have a natural aversion to snakes. Not necessarily reptiles. Well, crocodiles, obviously, and alligators. They're big, and they can definitely pack a punch. But it's probably just due to venomous reptiles, venomous snakes. Just something, you know, that you're afraid of, and you don't want anything to do with, because you know it can kill you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a follow up question. In Australia, with like indigenous groups, you have the rainbow serpent or rainbow snake, and that's interwoven into creation stories and folklore. But then in Christianity, of course, you've got the serpents, which is sometimes construed as Satan. So do you think that there's any kind of religious reasons that people might not like snakes today?
There's definitely probably some of that. The Mayans and stuff, they had venomous snakes around, and they almost, you know, worshipped them. The Aztecs, they show up a lot in their stelas and whatnot, their carvings and whatnot, you know, feathered serpent, all that. Yeah, there's definitely something to that. I mean, you know, in the Bible, when you refer to the serpent, you know, that's become synonymous with the devil, you know, and that's what, you know, the whole, you know, creation in Genesis, where it talks about the, you know, about them being cast out of the Garden of Eden because of the snake, because of the serpent. And I think a lot of that's just because the Jewish culture and that part of the world, there are some pretty venomous snakes there. I mean, you know, a cobra, we suspect, took Cleopatra in Egypt, which, you know, wasn't too far. And so there's definitely a lot of venomous snakes, a lot of cobras and stuff in that area. So it's just kind of something that those people identified with as something that could kill you. And you may not even see it before it gets you. So I think that's how it got kind of synonymized with that.
Yeah, I always thought about her as putting the asp in political aspirations.
dear.
So, but, you know, there's lots of dangerous animals. On the whole, would you say reptiles are any more dangerous than any other family of animals?
Well, it depends on where you are. And it depends on how close you're getting and how drunk you are.
As we say here in the South, hey, y'all, watch this.
Yeah, exactly. you know, a lot of snakes, I go out and look for them on a regular basis. As you probably saw, you said you watched some of my videos. So I've encountered probably hundreds of rattlesnakes, and I've never felt that I was in danger. But I'm also giving it the respect it's due, giving it its distance, and I don't handle them. You know, and that's really that. If you look at statistics, just statistics alone, more people are killed by dogs.
Yeah, I think they definitely do tend to stay away. And I once encountered a brown snake in Australia when I was just a teenager and I was going hiking, and it was all coiled up and it was just keeping away from me. And I think they generally tend to do that. And as long as you don't bother them, they won't bother you.
Yeah, and for the most part. And that's where a lot of problems come in is, you know, people see them and they think they have to do something about it. When in reality, if you just leave it alone, you'll probably never see it again and it'll go on its way. And you won't have to put yourself in danger by trying to get closer or trying to kill it.
I was going to say, I did some research for, I forget why, it was something for a show, and we were looking at what are the most dangerous animals, and by far, as far as number of people killed, livestock on farms, like cows and horses, kill way more people. because they're huge, and if they can just crush you, you know, they may not even mean to, but lots of people are around them, and they're in circumstances where they can be injured or fatally injured. So, yeah.
Right. And just like Karen was mentioning there before, they want to be left alone. I mean, here in the United States, we're pretty lucky. Well, in Georgia, you got a few venomous snakes that aren't, but most of ours are rattlesnakes. And yeah, I mean, they're nice enough to warn you that they're there before they bite.
Exactly. It's not I'm coming to get you. It's a stay away, right?
Yeah.
If
they wanted to bite you, they wouldn't rattle.
Exactly.
There's no point to it. And cotton mouths, another common one in the southeastern part of the country, their main defense is to coil up and show you the inside of their mouth, hence they get the name of cotton mouth. And they do that, and then they leave you alone. If they wanted to bite you, they'd bite you.
Mm-hmm. I guess there's a question. Are there any snakes that are aggressive and will chase after you or follow you or go for you?
All the accounts I've heard of snakes chasing people aren't usually verified. Researchers have never had snakes chase them. And it seems like when there are kind of things of, oh, it was coming the same way as me or whatever, it's because it was backed into a corner and that was the only way out. So typically, no, you're not going to see any snakes chase people. They have no reason to. I mean, the main reason they have their venom is for their food. And generally, they're going to go the other way if they can.
That's a relief for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I was in, I think I've told this story on the show before, but I was in Bahrain, and I used to go exploring out in the desert, and I'd take my bike out. And one day, I went down in this little valley, and there were all these little holes in the side of the valley walls. And I'm talking about a valley that's probably, I don't know, 25 feet wide and, I don't know, 15 feet deep, not so more of a gully, really, not, you know, but it was deep enough that I was disappeared. Like you couldn't see me from the road or wherever, because I was down in this gully. Anyway, from these holes, suddenly these lizards came out, and they were very peculiar. I'd never seen anything like them. They had like a tail, kind of like a stubby tail, like a turtle, and their heads were a little bit like a turtle, but they had a body more like a sort of fat lizard. And I think they're called mastigeres, like Egyptian mastigeres.
And Theramastics.
Yeah. And they came out and they hissed at me and they aggressively made me feel unwelcome. And I'd never had any kind of like reptile behavior like that in America. And I fled. I mean, they weren't that big, you know, they're maybe a foot, you know, at most, but they seemed like they were really uninterested in me visiting and they wanted it to be clear. They were not interested in my materials or surveys or whatever I was there for.
Right.
So be on your way, sir.
A lot of what we read as aggressive is actually defensive.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, one of the big things they say, you know, like you say, you're going to Yellowstone. You don't get between a bear and her cub.
Right.
And that's, they're being defensive. They're not being offensive in that case. Bears are known to attack a little bit, but usually there's a reason for that. But usually if a person gets attacked by an animal, it's usually due to something that the person did, whether they knowingly did it or not. And I mean, that's a hard thing for people to discern. Is, you know, I've heard people say, well, this, you know, this rattlesnake, it just rattled at us and rattled at us and struck at us and struck at us and struck at us. And it's like, well, did you leave it alone? What were you doing? Well, we were poking it with a stick. We were throwing rocks at it. Well, yeah.
When I grew up in Sydney, we had blue-tongued lizards under a shed in the backyard. Yes. And so I'm not sure if you're familiar with them.
They're pretty common in the pet trade, and they're really cool lizards. They have that blue tongue that they kind of open up and show their tongue. And
they're really pretty, and they tend to keep to themselves. So it's not like a lake story. They wouldn't come out and say stay away or anything like that. They just keep to themselves. In fact, a lot of people like having them around too, around the garden, because they get rid of insects and snails and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, before we dig in further on reptiles, a quick question: what is the New Mexico Herpetological Society? Like, what do you do, and like how is that? How old of an organization is it?
It was formed in 63, I believe, 1963, and it's basically around for the education of the general public about reptiles and amphibians, herpetofauna or reptiles and amphibians. We call them herps for short. Not to be confused with herpes. That's something completely different.
But very popular as well, from what I hear. So
I hear it spreads pretty well. So yeah, you know, there's we get together. We have a monthly meeting, and we usually have a speaker. It's usually about reptiles of some sort. Sometimes we branch out. We've had our our state bat expert in, and he's talked about bats before, which are obviously mammals, but. We do branch out a little bit, but usually we talk, have a speaker that speaks about that. We do outreach work. We'll go to schools, and we'll go to pretty much anywhere that we're asked to. One of the big things we do is every year down at Bosque del Apache, it's a migratory bird refuge. They have a festival of the cranes. The sandhill cranes come down and come through. And we usually have a big booth down there. It's amazing. They're birds, you know, they're prehistoric herps, but
that's very inclusive of you. Yeah.
But to see them in the numbers of hundreds and thousands, it's just amazing.
Well, they're so big. They're so big.
Yeah.
They fly over. We're in the migratory path here in my hometown. So they just came by a few weeks ago. And every now and then one will actually land. And to see those birds is astonishing. I mean, they're about 4 feet tall.
When you think about flying birds and that they literally, you know, go from Canada to Mexico, it's just amazing.
Yeah. And it's just the shocking, it's almost like to me, considering the biggest bird we have around here normally is a turkey vulture, to see a bird that big loose and flying around and flying in numbers that are so large. I would love to see them like land as a group, but usually when we see one land, it's something's up, you know, it's really hungry or it's lost or confused. It's not part of the big flock, I guess.
Right.
So, okay. But, you know, we're seeing 50 and 60 of them at a pop, you know, flying over, and they make such a cool noise too.
Mm-hmm. They do. Yeah, I love it. This time of year, every morning, there's a field that they'll usually be in, usually this time of year. It's great. I love seeing them.
Some people have claimed that they are possibly one of the root causes between around the Mothman sightings. And I think Mothman as a monster has been like evolved into this sort of humanoid creature. And, you know, people see it as having, you know, two wings and two arms and two legs, sort of a hexapod. But originally, if you go back and read John Keel's accounts and some of the newspapers, they were talking about giant birds. And the Sandhill Crane has the sort of like red coloring around its eyes. And I think a lot of people thought it might have been a good match because it's just you don't expect to see a bird that large if it's not local to you. So when they're migrating.
Oh, and they're huge, and even when you're, you know, in shadows and stuff, when they fly above you, you feel it. You see that shadow go above you, like, whoa, what was that?
Yeah,
you
know, it seems like it's bigger than
it is, and
they have a very peculiar sound they make as a flock. It's really cool. We're not here to talk about birds, though.
What? No. But yes, we do a table there every year. We haven't had it the past couple of years due to COVID, but we're hoping that we start back up with that again this year. So basically just that. And we do field trips. We try and go to look for rare species or look for, you know, to see if species have extended their ranges or just haven't been found in certain areas and whatnot. And absolutely try to add to the field here in New Mexico.
So I'm wondering, Josh, do you have any reptiles that are native to New Mexico, to that area?
We have several snakes, several lizards, turtles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
We even have our state reptile is actually the New Mexico whiptail, which is a parthenogenic lizard. So there are no males. They are all females. Clones of each other.
We were just discussing that. Yep.
Yeah, in birds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because we learned that roosters have no penis, and it's really changed my life.
Yeah.
So,
Blake was looking for another opportunity to insert that.
Basically, this is my new evangelism. Hey, my name is Blake. I like monsters. Yeah. Roosters have no penis. Did you know this? Well, I did one more thing before we start topping into the sort of myths and legends. When I was thinking about reptiles, I thought about snakes and lizards and turtles. And I think you've already addressed this. And alligators. These are pretty common in the United States. Are there any other big reptile groups that maybe we're not thinking of? Or is that basically captured?
That's pretty much it. I mentioned the Tuatara earlier. Yeah. That's really it. You know, crocodilians, that includes crocodiles, alligators. Caiman, things like that. They're all pretty similar.
But crocodilians are not really lizards, right? They just look like scaled up versions.
No, they're not. They're actually, they're totally different. They're bigger. They have different scales.
If I remember it, scutes, is that right? Scutes? Something.
They're a type of scale, usually like found on the belly, and snakes have them, turtles and stuff. Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right. Let's get into some myths.
You mentioned before that I have to mention this since you're so fond of the roosters having no penises.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the snakes make up for it. They have two.
Really? My mind has been blown.
Yeah. Something else for you to evangelize about. Hey.
So
did you know
males have two penises, you say?
Well, it's a hemipene that kind of comes out and it divides, and they will, like, you know, they'll rotate when they breed. They'll rotate them, and they can be locked up for hours.
Interesting. Now, I know, like, the opossum, and apparently this is true for a lot of marsupials, but I know opossums have a forked penis, and that's because the females have only a single excretory orifice, which is kind of like a cloaca. It's not a cloaca, but, and then.
But ducks are like that too.
Well, ducks have. Like some ducks have huge penises, bigger than the length of their body, which is insane. I mean, enviable, but insane.
I can feel another episode.
It's like monster penises coming soon to this show.
Yeah.
It's like, but do we know? I mean, why do they have two penises? It's like, I mean, I wouldn't complain, but
I mean, your guess is as good as mine. A lot of this stuff, you know, we can kind of make guesses, but we really don't know.
Oh, I get it. It's two penises and no hand is another punishment from God.
What? That's right.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Okay. This conversation went in new directions. Wasn't even expecting.
If ever there's an opportunity with you.
I'm afraid that's true.
So yeah, we want to get into some myths about reptiles. And while ago, we did an episode about giant snakes. And from memory, the guest said that about 30 feet is probably the absolute maximum size a modern snake could reach.
Yeah.
So Josh, have you heard anything to contradict that?
Well, I mean, I hear a lot of things. Whether it's backed up and confirmed is a whole different story. But yeah, that seems to be about it. Reticulated pythons are the longest. Anacondas are heavier. So if you're asking, you know, which is the longest snake in the world and which is the heaviest snake in the world, you get two different answers. The reticulated python is the longest. I heard 37 feet. I don't know if that was authenticated or whatnot as the longest, you know, but that would have been a captive animal. So they tend to do better in captivity without, you know, natural predators and things like that. But and then anacondas do get heavier. They're just a heavier bodied snake. They spend more time in the water, so they're able to, you know, get around with a heavier stature.
Sure.
They're beautiful. We had a, if you can believe it, I'm old enough that I remember like carnival sideshows coming by with like world's largest snake, and you stop and pay a few bucks to see it, you know. They'd have an albino snake and that kind of thing. So to see anacondas, of course, I watch a lot of documentaries and seeing them in their, when you manage to see them at all, man, for a snake to be that long, they can really hide. Goodness, they're good.
Yeah, they can. I remember growing up, my mom found this thing. She saw it, just happened to be flipping through the channels and saw it. And so she recorded it to her DVR for me. And it was this guy who was out there and he was looking for anacondas and he had someone with him and he says, so what do we do? And he says, well, just water over here and take your shoes off and just walk around until you bump into one.
No, thanks.
Yep. I've seen that kind of thing where they're just diving their hands into the water and you think, what are they doing? And the next thing they pull up a big piece of a giant anaconda and like they start trying to pull it out of the water.
Yeah, and it's funny because that guy, that biologist that was there, his name is Jesus Rivas, he actually works up at New Mexico Highlands in Las Vegas, New Mexico. Not nearly as many casinos there.
Wow. But, now, what happens in Las Vegas, New Mexico? Does it stay there?
Well, I don't know. There's actually a lot of movies and TV shows and stuff are filmed out there. They've got a town square. That looks really, really old, and it's really cool. In fact, have you ever seen the show Longmire?
Oh, I don't know that show at all.
No, so. I don't.
It's pretty cool. It's a kind of a modern Western. You know, so he has the sheriff, and he has interactions with the reservation and stuff. It's pretty cool, kind of a murder mystery type thing.
I feel like if we're talking about snakes, I have to bring up the stuff that my grandma told me. My granny would always talk about hoop snakes and joint snakes. And, I would be on the lookout because, you know, granny told me about them, so I knew they had to be real. But, you know, as I got older, I learned maybe not so much. Now, I think there might be a natural explanation for the joint snake, but the hoop snake seems to be entirely fantasy. Do you want to talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, so... probably what comes from the joint snake is probably not even a lizard. It's probably not even a snake at all. It's actually probably from a legless lizard. They will actually lose their tails like many lizards do. And so people think that, well, if it still wiggles around, and that's so that predators will go after the tail while the lizard can get away. So a lot of people would think, oh, it's still moving, so it must be still alive. And that's really not the case. It's just nerve firing.
Yeah. And then the hoop snake, she would tell me that it would often chase you down a hill and just roll up into a wheel. grab its own tail in its mouth and roll after you. And it would chase you really fast. And if you managed to get hit by it, you would die because it had a spike on the end of its tail. And then,
right.
Yeah, sometimes I've heard stories where they would spike a tree or something and the tree would die. So it's interesting folklore, but I can't even imagine any animal sort of fitting the bill for that one. That seems to be entirely
no. No, there are some snakes. When you pick them up, they will kind of, especially there's a snake called a sharp tail snake, and it'll actually take its tail and kind of stick it into your hand, trying to get you to let go. There's no real thorn, or it doesn't inject any venom or anything like that. There are snakes. King snakes will eat other snakes, and I've seen it happen in captivity. I've seen pictures where they actually accidentally latch onto their own tail and start trying to eat themselves.
Ouroboros. Yep.
Yeah. So that might be when someone saw one. Maybe someone saw one, biting its tail. I don't know. And I think a lot of things, just the more they get told, the more great the story gets.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Do you think that she believed in these, Lake, or she was just telling you to creep you out as a kid?
She seemed to believe. I mean, she seemed to think they were real. I was especially suspicious about the joint snake, because her story was that if, it would break into pieces, and if you put all the pieces into a bucket or something, overnight they would rejoin. And my father independently had heard the same legend. He was unsure. This was in the days before, the internet. So I it was a little harder for me to look up this kind of a story.
I think a lot of times, you see it wiggling, you think it's alive, and then you're like, oh, well, then both sides must be alive. And then it just kind of takes off from there.
Mm-hmm. And you see this I know we have like a blue-tailed skink around here, and they drop their tails pretty easy.
A lot of lizards do that. And that's like I said earlier, they can actually drop it. You don't even have to actually grab their tail. They'll actually just drop it. And it has nerves. It'll fire off and wiggle around. And, you get your predator to go after that, and the lizard runs to safety. And then the tail will actually grow back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember as a kid seeing that with lizards. And I never did this, but had other friends that would pull off the tail and, torment the poor things. Just tiny, tiny little lizards. Oh, I was just speaking of lizards. We've talked a little bit about snakes and venomous snakes. Can lizards be venomous as well?
Well, in the Americas, we have a couple species of lizards, Gila monsters and beaded lizards, which actually are venomous. Gila monsters do come into the United States, the southwestern United States, Arizona, California, little parts of New Mexico, and up around the Grand Canyon, that part of the Grand Canyon, the western part of the Grand Canyon there, even up into Utah and Nevada.
Okay.
Do they use their venom for hunting?
It's mainly for defense.
Really? Okay.
And they eat eggs. They'll eat small rodents too. And, probably birds and things too, but they tend to like eggs. And but they will use the venom as a defense. There's been no recorded deaths from the venom. And then recently, like within the past probably 10 years or so, they've discovered that a lot of monitor lizard species also produce a venom. So the largest lizard in the world is the Komodo dragon. It is also venomous.
Wow.
Before, they thought it was just bacteria that would build up in the mouth, because they'd bite a water buffalo and then come back to it later and it dies.
Yeah,
and they would just eat it, tear it apart and whatnot. But so they found out that it actually is a venom. It's not just bacteria.
Wow.
Okay, that's what I'd heard. It's done documentaries years ago. Yeah,
they're big chunkers. They're big. Yeah. That would be terrible. Beautiful, but I remember how scary those Bahraini lizards were, and they were barely, a foot long. I don't. I don't think I would care to see an 8-foot lizard coming at me. So, no. My dad was always scared when we were going down. My grandfather had about 360 acres in the country, and there was all the swampland. I like to go out and fish and stuff. He was always concerned snakes were going to fall out of the tree onto us, Is that a real thing that happens in America, or like, is that a real hunting technique or something? That
I mean, if they're in a tree and they, you know, happen to lose—I hate to say lose footing because they don't have feet. But, you know, they climb onto a weak branch and it breaks, or they fall. I've had them sometimes. Like I have snakes here at the house, and sometimes I'll feed them, and they'll come, you know. I dangle the mouse in front of their cage and they'll come right out and just fall off the edge after they grab that prey item. So sometimes they'll fall, but they're not gonna fall on a prey item or anything like that. There are stories, this is funny, in Florida where green iguanas have become popular. They were popular in the pet trade and they get let loose by people. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they escape on their own or they're let loose after, you know, this cute little, you know, 8-inch lizard they buy at the pet store turns into a 6-foot lizard with a tail that whips at you. You know, they get let go and there's just a big population of them down there. And they like to hide in trees. And where they're originally from, they do okay in Florida, but if it gets really, really cold, they'll actually fall out of trees.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or say Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose. It kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
We've got a podcast recommendation I think will be really fun and or useful for Monster Talk listeners. I Know Dino, the big dinosaur podcast.
Studying dinosaurs can teach us about the prehistoric world, but also the world of today. For example, migration patterns of dinosaur lineages can tell us about the Earth's changing continents.
Climate models of dinosaur ecosystems help us understand global warming.
Studying dinosaur diets can help show the link between plant and animal evolution.
Talk about paleo. In many dinosaur injuries, paleopathologies are the first known occurrences of diseases.
A new episode of I Know Dino comes out every week with new dinosaur discoveries you won't hear about anywhere else. You can find I Know Dino on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right.
Wow.
Wow.
We went to Key West to see, well, I went for vacation, but the East Martello Museum is where the famous Robert the Doll is located. And it's in a fort, a big, you know, stone fort, rock fort, brick. I'm not sure what it's made of. It's effectively stone. It was just covered with iguanas. They were everywhere.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they're not a native species there. So they're pushing out, you know, some kind of native. There's more non-native species in Florida than there are.
You're talking about New Yorkers, right? Yeah, totally true.
Well, that too. Lots of those too. But I mean, you know, I mean,
they bring bagels. Just, don't knock it. They bring
just,
bagels.
Not just reptiles. You know, not just reptiles. Monkeys and other things too. So,
So,
talking a lot about snakes and their reputation for being dangerous. Is it true that all snakes are dangerous or not?
Some snakes are venomous and some snakes aren't. The real key to being safe out there is to know your venomous snakes. There's a lot less venomous than there are venomous, except in Australia. That's completely backwards there, but that's Australia. Here in the United States, in like I said, most of the country, we got it easy. It's rattlesnakes And then you have your copperheads and your cottonmouths and your coral snakes. So in the U.S., those are the only ones you really have to worry about. And like I said, if you see them and you just leave them alone, then you'll be fine.
Yeah, I think it's such a stereotype, though, about snakes in Australia, because I grew up in Sydney, metropolitan Sydney, and saw that brown snake once. My mother lives in Queensland on the Sunshine Coast, and one day she discovered a snake in the garage, just a garden snake. And those are the only snake encounters that we've ever had. And I know living here in Denver that I've come across bull snakes and rattlesnakes and other different kinds a lot more than I ever did in Australia.
Right.
And it depends on where you live, though.
Depends on where you live and what you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tell people, I have people, friends here, you know, they're like, man, I would love to see a rattlesnake in the wild. And I'm like, okay, well, let's go find you one. Really? Is it that easy? And I'm like, well, I've seen about 50 this year. Really? So yeah, I mean, it just depends on, you got to know how to look for them and where they are and whatnot. But yeah, sure. It's a lot of times we don't encounter them because we're not looking for them.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially in the cities.
Yeah. I've got a neighbor. My neighbor and my wife are both incredibly afraid of snakes. And I'm not. I mean, my dad is too. It's weird. I'm not that worried about him. And I guess I took it to heart that, you know, they largely just want to get away. Here in Georgia, we live out in the suburbs. So we see a lot of wildlife, coyotes, deer, whatever. But snake-wise, I've only seen a king snake and a pine snake. And a pine snake is so tiny. It's like maybe 4 or 5 inches. It almost looks like a big worm. And I know we have other snakes, but those are the only two I've seen. But my neighbors and my wife are so terrified of snakes. And I keep trying to explain to them that, you know, most of the ones we bump into are harmless. And they wanted me to kill that king snake. I'm like, no. If you're afraid of snakes, you want the king snake here. That's your best friend. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
Well, I'm gonna...
snakes, they'll eat anything, but they are known for eating other snakes, including rattlesnakes.
Mm-hmm.
When you said a pine snake, you probably mean a pine woods litter snake, because they're a lot smaller. Pine snakes are actually big, like the bull snakes.
Yeah, these are like little brown snakes, and they're about 4 to 5 inches long. They really look like little worms. Yeah, yeah. I might be misnaming it. Yep.
Yeah, and it could be a blind snake as well. So,
yeah. Well, at this point, I'm going to have to bring up another neighbor of Blake's in the past. I believe they're gone now, but didn't you have a snake handling church down the road?
We totally did. Yep, in Kingston. Yeah. Yep. There was actually there's two in Georgia, and they were both on either side of my hometown. So one was in Kingston, and one was right outside of my hometown in Cartersville. So, yeah, yep. Just
it's an interesting thing to look into if you ever get a chance. There's a really cool history behind it, and it's really kind of a cool thing to see.
I've seen it on video. I really didn't have any interest in going into a service
right?
from a distance. Yeah, wouldn't want to get involved.
Yeah,
like, it wouldn't shock you to know that one of them was right next to a trailer park. So it's like,
they're outlawed, aren't they? There,
I don't know. Like, there may be ordinances now. This was in the 80s.
I think they're still around, and I think they're allowed to operate.
You might need a permit or something. I'm
even
not sure.
Yeah, even just this, I think maybe 5-6 years ago, one of the main guys who did it got killed by a copperhead.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I mean, when you hear about someone getting bit and injured in those services, you know that they're not faking it. I mean, that like no, some churches like that were kind of famous for milking the snakes before the service, but these guys were pretty sincere, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're...
You know, and there's a lot of things out there. I mean, you know, snakes, if they have no reason to bite, they may not. And there's a lot of people out there that freehandle, and I don't understand it. I don't understand taking that kind of risk. But I mean, I have non-venomous snakes, and I had this one snake. I've never had a problem with it any time ever. You know, I've had it for, you know, 5-6 years, and I pick it up and it just decided to bite me.
Yeah.
You know, and and so it's just kind of, I don't want to take that chance. So I keep my distance, and I don't keep venomous. And that's that.
Yeah.
there are lots of cases of these religious leaders who have just been bitten so many times and their hands are just malformed from all of the bites, and they just keep doing it.
Wow. Yeah, it's yeah, it's a lot of the results from bites is tissue damage. So, you know, you have people who lose part of their fingers and things like that.
Hey, thanks for the memories.
Yeah. Badge of honor.
That's right.
So, you know, when you think about cobras, famously, you see images of people, you know, playing the, you know, a musical instrument and charming the snake. Can you talk about that? Because I think a lot of people do believe you can hypnotize a snake, or the snake can hypnotize you, or the snakes can be charmed.
Not really. First of all, snakes don't have outer ears, so the music isn't really doing much for them. They can feel vibrations, and they do have an inner ear, so they might be able to hear some things, but for the most part, they're considered to be deaf. But with cobras, they are real visual. And I know that, like, a lot of times you'll see, you know, the snake charmers, they'll reach around and they'll pet the cobra, you know, behind the hood. And what they're doing is they'll use their one hand, or someone else, you know, will be out there, and they'll get the snake to concentrate on that. And the snake concentrates on that, and it's not thinking of anything else, and just kind of, you just go behind, and it just doesn't even realize what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. I've heard stories of the snake's mouths being sewn up.
Yeah, things like that. They do that. I know we had a guy come speak to us who went to Egypt, and they had, you know, people were walking around with, they were walking around with cobras with their mouths sewed shut that you could take your picture with. And to me, you know, a snake needs to open its mouth in order to eat. And cruel. So to me, that's cruel, and it's animal abuse. And they'll do it at rattlesnake roundups and stuff, which, hey, yay for Georgia. They just got rid of a live rattlesnake roundup. They don't have it anymore. They got rid of it. So we're excited about that.
But. Good. I, you know, I'm sure they have enough problems with lawnmowers and other things going on.
Exactly. Exactly.
Only last night, I was watching part of The Jungle Book, the original movie, with my son. And we were watching, I'm assuming it's a boa constrictor. So near the start of the movie that hypnotizes the boy.
Ooh, is that, that's, I think that's Sterling Holloway. He's from Rockmart, Georgia. Salute.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. The character is Ka. It's probably a reticulated python. Or a Burmese python. I think the markings were indicative of a reticulated python. But there are Burmese pythons or Indian pythons there as well.
Yeah. So the snake is the same voice as Winnie the Pooh, too. I think that's.
Yep.
That's interesting. And also,
and difference. Also the snake in Robin Hood.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what Disney did during that time, is they'd contract people for so many movies and use their voice over and over and over again. They still do it today. But.
Interesting. And I'm just wondering if boa constrictors, as you hear that they can eat people or have eaten people, is that true?
I don't think there's been any real definitive proof. There were some pictures that came out a while back, but there were reasons from both sides of it to say that it was fake, that it was staged, that they put the person in there and then, you know, cut open the snake. I don't know. It's possible, but I don't think it happens very often.
Like an edge case. It'd be rare, right?
It'd be extremely rare. They're not going to hunt a human. They really, really don't have any. Don't want to have anything to do with us.
Yeah, it's comforting too.
There are some spectacular photos on the internet of snakes eating more than they should, and what happens, and, like, you know.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
No.
I had a friend who had a couple pair of boa constrictors, and one of the things we always tell them is, you know, you feed them separately, and probably not a good idea to keep them together anyway. And he was keeping them together. Hadn't had any problems, and he separated them when he fed them, and then he put them back together, put them back in the cage together. And the next morning he calls me and says, dude, one of my snakes is missing.
Oh no.
And I said, well, did the cage get opened or when he got the cage from me. So that's why he was kind of is the cage open? No. And I'm like, is the other one really, really big? He said, yeah. And so he lost that snake. And then, the one that got eaten, and then it was too big a meal, so it gave it back. And and then it ended up passing itself. So, and
they're kind of like goldfish sad. That way. They don't seem to know when to stop.
Well, you kind of have that jaw that is real flexible. So they're able to walk their jaws across their prey and swallow things that are bigger than them. Mm-hmm. And kind of once they start that process, it's kind of hard to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so so you really got to watch that. Even like I breed king snakes, and king snakes are known to eat other snakes, and they will eat their own kind. So I got to watch that when I put them together to breed, make sure they're not going for that. And I've had to separate them a couple times because of it. So,
mm-hmm.
So here's one I was really interested in this one. I had heard both sides of this. So I don't know if you can answer this definitively, but do turtles feel their shells? Do turtles feel their shells?
Yes, they do. It's part of their skeletal system.
Wow.
So yes, they do. So we always say, my dad said, he had his grandma down in St. George, Utah had a pet tortoise, and it had they had screwed an eye hook into its shell. And so it had kind of a leash, in the yard. It would just be able to, go on that only in that area right there. And that was probably very much hurting the turtle.
Oh, wow.
Sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a lot of different kinds of turtles here in Georgia. Of course, the probably the most common one we see is, either the snapping turtle or the alligator snapping turtle. And those get quite big. And there's a lot of legends around those. I guess the most common one I hear is that if a snapping turtle bites you, it won't release until it hears thunder and lightning, which, preposterous. First of all, I think if you've ever seen one bite something, you'll see that it doesn't need to wait to release, because when it bites, it takes a chunk out of whatever it's biting.
Yeah.
They do.
They have very strong jaws. I'm always watching those shows where they're noodling for catfish.
Uh-huh.
The one I'm to find mm-hmm. a snapping turtle. I'm just waiting.
I've rescued a bunch of them, and it's extremely dangerous. I keep a pair of leather gloves in my truck, and I know how to get behind them so they can't reach me with their mouth. But even it's when they snap, it is terrifying. But I have a soft place in my heart for them, because I just hate to see something that old and that big get run over by a car.
Yeah, one of the big rumors that come about is there's really not much known about them. I just listened to a podcast about a guy who's researching them in Georgia, actually, alligator snappers. And there's really not a lot known about them. They definitely live upwards of 100 years, maybe even more. And it's one of the rumors, one of the myths that hasn't been confirmed, is that there are things that they found embedded in their shells. Musket balls from the Civil War. And
oh, wow.
Like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
They can get incredibly big. My grandpa had one. It must have been 30 pounds. I know they get bigger than that, but the shell was just enormous, and the turtle was way bigger than the shell. I mean, they kind of hang out all over the place from their shells.
Right.
So they're not like a box turtle or anything. So.
Right. Right. They had one at the Tulsa Aquarium that was like over 200 pounds.
Wow.
It was huge. And they're cool, because they have that little, their tongue, they'll mm-hmm. wiggle it around. It looks like a worm, and then the fish will come in and they just nail them. Yeah. So they'll lure them. And there's other reptiles that do that as well. Like even like baby rattlesnakes will have the tip of their tail will be like a yellowish or a greenish color. Baby copperheads as well. And mm-hmm. they'll use that to lure in prey.
Really?
So yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So, no, I've heard that the baby rattlesnakes are just as venomous as the adults.
So, it varies. The big myth we hear is that the babies are more dangerous than the adults, and that's not true. Mm. Some species show that the venom is a little more potent, in a baby than an adult. And a lot of that can be determined by diet, but you know, what they're eating can help kind of compose their venom. So, but some animals, they start out eating like lizards and things. And as they get older, they'll, you know, move on to mammals or things like that. Some species, not all. And so the venom can change over time, but you look at a baby rattlesnake, look at an adult rattlesnake, the venom gland on an adult rattlesnake is bigger than the entire head baby rattlesnake. So you're going to get a lot more venom from an adult. You're not going to get that from a baby.
That's just math, even, right?
Yeah. Math, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, and then another along with that is they say, well, the babies don't know how to control their venom. And that's not true as well. They do know how to control their venom. From as soon as they're born, they say probably around there, it's hard to do it, but snakes will bite and not inject venom. It's less than 25%. So don't take that gamble.
No. So Blake, did you want to follow up with the question about turtles?
Well, just because I've been in many arguments about this, and I think it matters whether you're in England or America, but you've got turtles, tortoises, and terrapins. Can you talk about what the differences are?
Like, so turtles is kind of the entire family. So anything that has the shell, the arms, the legs, head, tail, that's going to be a turtle. So even your big Galapagos tortoises are technically turtles. Now, tortoises are turtles that are adapted to land. You know, if you look at it like a Galapagos tortoise's feet, it looks more like an elephant feet, elephant's feet, than it does like a red-eared slider or a snapping turtle. That's part of it. Then there's always exceptions. You know how that goes. Like box turtles, they live mainly on land, but they are in fact related to water turtles. And so at one point, terrapins were considered the water turtles, and then tortoises were the land turtles. But that's kind of gone away from that. Now it's more like turtles are in the water, and then the tortoises are on the land. And actually, they're all turtles. But there's a species that are called terrapins, the diamondback terrapins. They're found mostly in brackish water along the coast. They kind of retained that terrapin name.
So, like the animals, language also evolves.
Exactly.
Indeed, it does.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
So, Blake has left me with this question. So, thanks, Blake. If your pet snake gets big, should you release it into the wild?
Absolutely not. Ask the people in Florida about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was a good opportunity for a PSA.
Yeah. You know, and it doesn't, that, but that, but like I said earlier with iguanas, I mean, they've got an iguana problem down there. They've got there's so many kinds of lizards down there that you see in your pet stores. They're all over in Florida, you know, chameleons, everything like that. They're all down there. And tegus are actually, they're a South American lizard. And they're actually probably more dangerous to the environment than the pythons are in the Everglades.
Oh, really?
But we just don't hear about them because they're not the big snake that political hits get.
Yeah. You know? That's fascinating.
But definitely, like here in Albuquerque, the problem we have is a lot in the pet trade. And probably if you were around in the 70s, you probably saw the little goldfish bowl with the red-eared slider turtle in it, and the little palm tree and little kit that comes with it. And people here, they buy them when they're babies, even though they're not legal to be sold until over 3 inches. But and then they get too big for their goldfish bowl, so they turn them loose in the river. And so now we don't see our painted turtles; we only see the sliders.
Oh man!
So they are out competing the native turtles, and it is a problem. And they can actually bring disease into the population. You know, and like I had a friend, I kid you not, was at a pet store, and this guy walked in with an albino monocled cobra, and he decided he didn't want to keep it anymore, so he's just going to go up to the mountains and let it go.
Oh, no. That's amazing.
The snake is not adapted for the area, so it's not good for the snake, and it's not good for the ecosystem either. So
right.
For anyone.
And it seems like you never know when a snake is going to just, or any of these animals are just going to turn out to also have parthenogenesis. That's a
right. I mean, for the most part, you know, yeah, it's not that big a deal. It's just going to, until that animal dies. Like even here, you know, when we relocate rattlesnakes, you don't take them too far because they don't know where to hibernate.
Yeah.
Mm. So, I mean, it's even to that, you know, it's just very, they're good where they are. Just leave them where they are.
Yeah. People don't think when they buy pets. A lot of people don't anyway.
A lot of them don't. And that's, you know, if you want to get a snake, I think they're great pets, but you know, you do your research first. You understand that this thing could live 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
And that you're going to have to feed it other animals. There are no snakes that are vegetarians or vegans. They're all carnivores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My son wants one, and so I'm definitely not ready. He wants spiders as well.
you wanted to talk a little bit about horned toads, which I think is that's a fascinating animal. My mother told me about those. She went to college in Texas and saw them down there. And I didn't know what to make of her stories because I had, you know, at the time, they were, again, not a really easy thing to check it out. But my understanding is they cry tears of blood.
Well,
or something. What?
Well, so first of all, it's not a toad; it's a lizard.
Yeah.
And they're called horned frogs, horned toads, horny toads, horny frogs. In fact, TCU, Texas Christian University, is their mascot is the horned frog, and that's what it is. It's actually the Texas horned lizard.
Okay.
And they're kind of stout, bigger, round looking. So they do kind of look like a toad. But you know they're not amphibians. But yeah, one of their defenses is they'll actually squirt blood out of their eyes.
So I bet it works.
It does. It tastes really bad apparently, and usually their main predator is probably coyotes, foxes, things like that. And so you know they get in there and they get a mouthful of that and they're done.
That is fascinating.
Genius. Yeah.
But why do people call them toads? It's so weird. They don't look anything like a toad to me.
They're just kind of stout bodied and they just kind of, yeah, there's a lot of things that you'd be surprised. We have a thing, you know, when we get a call on a snake, I actually do snake removals through my work. If they say it's a 6-foot snake, it's probably actually a 3-foot snake.
Mm-hmm.
If they say it's this color, it's probably another color. And you know, so I've had some of the weirdest descriptions turn up to be something that looks nothing like what they described. It's just funny what people come up with and how they see things. I don't question their how they see it. That's how they see it.
You may be able to set my wife at ease though. I found a snake skin that was more than 6 feet long. And I was saying that the snake didn't necessarily have to be 6 foot long, that the skin might have been stretched. Is that plausible? Or do you think the snake was
That's very plausible.
Okay, good.
they definitely stretch out. It's so when a snake sheds its skin, it releases a layer of oily substance in between the layer that's going and the one that's staying.
Snake lube.
Yeah. And so it just slips right off.
Yeah.
And as they do that, they catch it on something, so it stretches it.
Okay.
And then it dries, and it's very flimsy. You know?
Yeah,
There you go.
It hung over the back of my pickup truck, from one side of the bed to the other, and I was like, "This is cool." And then my wife came home, and she was like, "That is not cool. That's the opposite of cool."
Yeah, you know, a lot of common snakes that get. They get pretty large around there, probably a rat snake or something like that.
Yeah.
You guys have indigo snakes there that are, they're huge, and they eat rattlesnakes, and they're huge. They're awesome. They're on the brink of extinction, but there's the Oriane Society based in Georgia is actually doing a lot to bring them back, and they're actually having a lot of good success with it. So
cool. I think they're really neat. I don't want to keep them as pets, but I love having them around. So
Yeah, for the most part, they're free pest control.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
They eat rat snake. It's called a rat snake for a reason. They eat rats. They eat rodents.
Yep.
Bull snakes, on the other hand, don't eat bulls. So I don't know where that came from. Actually, bull snakes, they kind of bluff. They have a modified epiglottis that they'll vibrate inside their mouth, and it sounds like a rattle.
Oh,
it does. Yep.
Yeah.
The one that
In addition to shaking their tail in the leaves, which most colubrids will do. So yeah, it's pretty cool to see them do their whole show.
Yeah, I've encountered them around here on hikes, and
yeah,
the first time I came across one, I thought it was a rattlesnake, not knowing better.
Yeah. Yep.
Is that what you see? That's bull. What?
That bull. Yeah. Well, exactly. It's BSing you.
Yeah.
So, Josh, was there anything else that you wanted to discuss with us?
It's funny, all the things that people invent about snakes, you know, these myths that we talk about, you know, the hoop snake, the snake reassembling itself and stuff like that. And it's funny to overlook some of the things that snakes do actually do, some of the amazing things they do, like we mentioned, the squirting blood out of the eyes. I mean, I'm surprised that's not more demonized than it is. It's something that, you know, involves blood and involves that, but there's,
well, and it involves my mom. I mean, she loves to demonize everything, so I just
but you know, they're in Southeast Asia, there are snakes that can modify their rib cage and glide, so they actually have flying snakes. You know, and there's lizards that do that as well. And then you even have the basilisk, you know, not to be confused with the cryptid basilisk, but the actual basilisk, the young ones, can actually run across the top of water.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've seen your videos of that. Amazing.
They're nicknamed the Jesus Christ lizard.
Which is what I would shout if one ran in front of me like that. Yes, like, yeah.
Give you a shock.
Yeah, I mean, well, usually they're running away from you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But that's got to be startling.
Right. And then
one of the
coolest snakes are the hognose snakes, and you definitely have them in Georgia and in Colorado. In fact, I saw my first one in Colorado. But they've got a couple different things that they do when you encounter them. They'll kind of coil up, and then they'll widen their necks, so they kind of like a cobra, how they kind of hood up. Except they don't stand straight up like a cobra does. They kind of just go to the side and just kind of show off their hooded up side there. And they'll kind of hiss a little bit. And then if you keep on bugging them, they'll start to strike, but they don't strike at you. They actually strike to the side. So they don't even want, they're not even trying to bite you. They just want you to leave them alone.
Yeah.
And then if you continue to do this, you continue to do this, they'll just flop over and play dead.
Ooh.
Oh.
Lay over on their back. They'll start just like nasty stuff out of their mouth. The tongue just kind of hangs out there like you would expect, like something, you know. And then they'll start pooping all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's... And it stinks.
Yes.
It makes a mess and it stinks. And then, and the funny thing is, if you take them and you flip them back over right side, they'll roll back over to their back.
Oh, wow.
Look, I'm dead. Shh, I'm dead. Shh.
And then after a while, they'll kind of peek up, and then they'll kind of, you know, come back up. And, oh, okay, you're going to leave me alone? Okay.
Uh-huh.
And then they'll just go on their way.
That's amazing. That reminds me, the whole evacuating their bowels thing, that's a... I've done a lot of turtle rescue around here, and it's not uncommon if you pick up a turtle for it to just explosively empty itself.
Toads and turtles, when you pick up box turtles, like take them and move them across the road so they don't get hit.
Yeah.
Is that a fear thing or more of a protective
thing? I think it's a fear mechanism? Protective thing. Yeah. You know, kind of like the horned lizard squirting into the mouth of a coyote.
I've been told the same thing. That people also will do this if you scare them badly enough. It's never happened to me, but I don't think that's anecdotal. I think that's real. But
no, it happens. They lose control of their bowels. But yeah, I always feel bad because, you know, especially out here in the desert, you know, we find a box turtle and move it across the road and it urinates. Well, that's all moisture that it needs.
Yes. Know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always kind of feel bad, but at the same time, I don't want it to get run over by a car. So
no.
That's it's the same thing when I tell women I'm married. It's, they cry, save your water. You need that moisture.
Oh, sure. Another, that happens a lot.
Oh, I'm dying. Okay.
Since we have that's kind of unusual and kind of funny is the... It's the hook-nosed snake does it, but there's other snakes too. In fact, coral snakes are known to do it as well. That they'll actually pop their cloaca, and so it actually makes a farting sound.
Wow! So
you pick up the snake, and it just starts farting.
Wow!
Didn't expect that.
So, well, you know, but you think about it, skunks do the same thing. So
sure. It's
kind of a parallel evolution there, but you know. They don't smell as bad as
I can't remember the poem. Was it black necks to white, don't let them bite. Black necks to red, you'll probably be dead.
Here's the fun thing about that rhyme. It's red to yellow, kill a fellow. Red to black, venom lack, or friend of Jack. There's different varieties.
Yeah.
There's the fun thing about that poem. No one ever gets it right.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never heard of it before. You want to get that right.
So that's why I say, don't know what it is, leave it alone.
That's what my dad's poem is. I see a snake, kill it with a rake. And I'm like, Dad, no. He's terrible. He really is. He really does. He's so scared of snakes that he's, you know, just, I don't think it, you can barely have a conversation with him about it. It's just, you know, so anyway.
But I think the best thing he can do is pick up a field guide. A lot of times they're regional. The more regional you get, the better, because then you're not going to, you know, come up with something that's actually, you know, several hundred miles away from you that's not going to show up. And I run into that a lot, too. People claiming, oh, yeah, I found this green rat snake, you know, in the North Rio Grande Valley. I'm like, no, you didn't. You only found the very boot heel, whatever. But anyway, but yeah, so that's what I recommend is you pick up a local field guide. You know, like we've got a couple of New Mexico ones. If you can't find one for your state in particular, then, you know, find one for the region, or, you know, they're divided into Western and Eastern. So as well, so you can find out what snakes are out there, find the venomous ones. They're usually all grouped together, learn how to identify those and you'll be fine.
Yeah, and even then, knowledge,
if you don't know what it is, just leave it alone.
There's that. Yep. Yep.
Good advice. I think knowledge is power. And we've had, Lynn Kelly on the show before talking about spiders. She's an Australian science teacher. That. Yeah, she was just petrified of spiders and then decided to learn about them instead. And I think that's a really good tactic to take if you're scared of something.
Really, learn more about it.
Yeah, so I wanted to correct you. You were asking me earlier, I misnamed it as a pine snake. It's the worm snake and the ring neck snake. Those are the two that I mostly, both of those are very small. Yeah.
Yeah, they are. I've found both of those beautiful snakes.
Yeah, they are. The ring necks, gorgeous. Yeah.
Ring necks, one of their defenses is they'll coil up the bottom of their tail and turn it upside down, and it's bright red underneath. They're beautiful snakes.
Mm. I have to Google that. I don't know what they look like.
They're mostly black with a little, as soon as you see it, you'll see why they call it a ring neck. It's got a little sort of yellowish white ring around its neck. So,
well, it's kind of funny because the ring neck snake species that's in our area most of the time doesn't have a ring around its neck.
No. I guess nobody wanted it.
Yeah, it's just that subspecies. They get bigger too. They get like twice the size as those other ones. And they're actually mainly snake and lizard eaters. Whereas the ones you come across are probably earthworms.
Yes, earthworms, lots of earthworms. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to make sure you had an opportunity to talk about where, you know, if people want to learn more about reptiles in their community, where should they go? You sort of mentioned the guidebooks is a good place. Are there other organizations like your Herpetological Society in the rest of the country?
Typically, yeah. I mean, if you look up, there's probably one in every state. You know, so you could probably find a Georgia Herpetological Society. If you get into Arizona, there's like a Phoenix Herpetological Society, a Tucson Herpetological Society, but they've got all kinds of snakes. So they're all around. You go to different Facebook groups. I recommend the Wild Snakes Education group. It kind of spawned off of an ID group where they were getting so busy with traffic and stuff that people were asking questions about the snakes that they decided to go ahead and create its own group so they could keep that one just for identification so people could get an ID right away.
Yeah.
And so they've done a lot of good things, creating a lot of good graphics and writing articles that, you know, dispel a lot of myths and things like that. It's a great, great resource. So it's just look up Wild Snakes Education. You'll find it. And there's one for lizards and turtles as well.
I've seen people try to do that with spiders, and everybody wants it to be a brown recluse. Like, I'm sure this is a brown recluse, but this is a brown recluse.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah. It's kind of one of those things. It's got to be the most dangerous
exactly.
one.
Exactly. It's the only kind of spiders there are.
Can't be that wolf spider that's not dangerous at all, or the garden spider or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Josh, this has been a really interesting conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. But we do have one final question, which we ask all of our guests, and that is, what's your favorite monster?
What's my favorite monster? So I actually got two answers for you.
Sure.
Well, the real monster is the Gila monster, so I got to go with that one.
Wow.
Okay.
I mean, it's a lizard, but it's called a Gila monster, so I'll go with that. But
I did see a documentary about a giant Gila monster once. What?
Yeah. Oh, yes, along with the giant rabbits and ants. But, yeah, so I think that, and then on that, as far as cryptids go, I any of the dragons and things have always just been a love of mine. I'm, you know, I was into Dungeons and Dragons.
Still with the reptiles. Yeah, that's definitely on brand for you.
Yep. And I've always loved that. So I'd have to go with dragons.
Good answers.
Yeah, good answers. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for making time to share your knowledge with our listeners and for talking to us about this stuff. This is great.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah, no problem.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard an interview with Joshua Ems about reptile myths. I'll put links in the show notes to the New Mexico Herpetological Society and also provide more links about reptiles. These animals are fascinating and complex, and I hope that if you're a person afraid of such creatures, you might give them a little more consideration before chopping them up or stomping them next time. They're often beneficial, and with few exceptions, they just want to be left alone. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Monster Talk. Each episode, we strive to bring you the very best in monster-related content with a focus on bringing scientific skepticism into the conversation. If you enjoy Monster Talk, we now have a variety of ways to support the show, all with convenient links at monstertalk.org/support. That's monstertalk.org/support. We have links there to our Patreon page as well as a donation button. Another great way to support the show is to buy books from our Amazon Monster Talk wish list, which directly helps us with our research. We love used books very much, so don't feel compelled to buy new ones, and we love Kindle so we can share our digital libraries with each other. And finally, without spending any money at all, you can support us by leaving a positive review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive reviews help keep us visible in iTunes, which is a great way to help us find new listeners. And please share our show on your favorite social media platforms. Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Therapist Uncensored, Subtext, and Small Things Often. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com. Monster Talk's part of the Airwave family of podcasts. Our theme music is by Pete Stealing Monkeys. Thank you for listening, and thanks for sharing this show with your friends. Word of mouth is still the most effective way for us to grow our audience.
This has been a Monster House presentation.